right. Well, welcome. It is Tuesday, April 20th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 everywhere in the world. Nice to have you here. My name is Russ Belville. I'm Normal's National Outreach Coordinator. I work out of Portland, Oregon, but I work for the national office in Washington, D.C., which basically is pretty cool. I get to work, telecommute from home. I do everything over the internet. I'm in charge of building Normal chapters all around the country and the world, and I host our Normal Show Live, which is a live talk radio program, 1 hour a day, every day, at live.normal.org, 1 p.m. Pacific. And in fact, we're on right now. We've got about 5,000 people all over the internet that are watching us right this minute. So say hi to the internet. Hi, internet. There we go. Glad to have it. So we're here for the unofficial holiday of the cannabis community known as 420. Anybody out there, does everyone know what 420 came from, how we got 420? There's a couple people might know. Some people, there's a lot of rumors about it, like it means the police code for smoking pot, or there's 420 chemicals in pot, or none of those are true. The real story behind 420 is there's a group of high school kids in San Rafael, California, called the Waldos, who after their extracurriculars used to all meet at a particular statue at 20 after 4. One of these guys ended up becoming a roadie for the Grateful Dead, and he passed on that 420 to that community, and then, you know, just took off like wildfire. So that's your history of what 420 really stands for. And of course, what it stands for in America today is the celebration of cannabis, the cannabis community, cannabis lifestyle, and the notion of legalizing cannabis. So for today, we've got this presentation I'm going to give to you called The Time for Legalization is Now. Although I did misspeak a little bit, it's really the time for re-legalization. Because cannabis was legal in this country from the founding, all the way from the colonies, all the way up until 1937. So in this presentation, what you're going to learn are basically the answers to four questions, and that is, how have we gotten to this point? Because it kind of seems like these days everybody's talking about marijuana. Everybody's talking about legalization or medical marijuana. So why is it so popular now? What has changed since my day back in the 80s coming up when, you know, it was forbidden to talk about marijuana? What's the difference now? We'll also talk about why is marijuana legalization so popular? Why are people interested in the idea of legalizing marijuana, especially in places like here in Washington, Oregon, or California where we already have medical? Why is it necessary to go forward with full-on legalization? Third, what's driving this push toward legalization? What's happening in society, what's happening in technology that is making it possible for people to talk about this like never before? And finally, now that we're looking at Initiative 1068, which I hope you all signed the petition for out there that could legalize cannabis here in Washington State, what are our critics saying about marijuana legalization, and how are we going to fight against that? What's the rhetoric we can use to defuse the reefer madness, that I like to call it, that comes out of the prohibitionists? So by the time we finish this presentation, it's going to be about 55 minutes long. Should be able to answer some of those questions. A lot of fun stuff in here, maybe some facts and figures that you did not know about cannabis and cannabis users. So I hope y'all enjoy it. Also, this entire presentation will be available for download from our Stash blog, which is at stash.normal.org. If you grabbed any of those cards at the front desk, the websites are plastered all over it. You can download this and use some of the graphs and show your friends and so on. Also, at the end of the presentation, we'll leave about 30 minutes for question and answer. So if you didn't find the answer to your question in this presentation, you can just ask me directly. Everybody ready? All good? All right, let's get to it. We're going to start by, how do we get to this point? How did marijuana legalization becomes so popular in America today? And we're going to do this by taking a look at public opinion polls. Various pollsters have been asking the American people their opinions about cannabis legalization since the 1970s, pretty much. And I'll show you a kind of a look through time at how the popularity of cannabis reform has risen and fallen. In the 70s, it was really popular, the idea of re-legalization. In the 80s, Just Say No came up, and that popularity declined. And lately, the popularity has gone back up. So we're going to take this in five-year chunks, 5 years at a time of the war on drugs, and give you an idea how attitudes have changed. Give me a little more on the laptop channel four there. There we go. So this all starts with President Richard Nixon in 1969. We're going to start with his first 5 years from 69 through 1974. And there's a bunch of stuff on this diagram to take a look at. First of all the different groups that do polling on marijuana are listed here at the bottom. So ABC News, the ACLU, Rasmussen, Gallup, and so on, all listed on here in the bottom. We're keeping track of who's president at the time, so the different administrations. And the reason I like to do this is because sometimes people think of this as a partisan thing. they think, oh, liberals are for it and conservatives are against it, or Democrats are for it, Republicans are against it. And that's not true at all. Both sides have been equally bad as far as, you know, repressing those of us who choose to use cannabis instead of alcohol. So we'll take a look at that as we follow which administrations are going on. Then, the popularity of should we legalize cannabis is listed here in percent. Of course, up here at 50%, that's where we'd have a majority that supports re-legalization. So as we start off, we get these first few polls here, these yellow diamonds. They represent the Gallup organization, which did its first survey asking that question in 1970 and got 12% of people that thought it was okay that we should re-legalize cannabis. 12%, one out of eight at that time. Normal is founded in 1970 by Keith Strop with a $5,000 grant from the Playboy Foundation. And Normal becomes the first group that starts to talk about the notion of re-legalizing cannabis. So the conversation has begun. Now, as time goes on through the 70s, we get a couple more polls that start to trend upward in the 15 to 16% range. Even one here that gets up to 20%, this is the General Social Survey, gets up to about 20%. So in these first few days, these first few years of the war on drugs, from 69 to 74, there is a massive increase in public opinion. You know, to go from 12% to 20% in just 4 years, that's pretty remarkable. Now, we find some other bits of news that happen along this time, too. You'll see as we go through this graph, you'll find these little red frowny faces or green happy faces, and they represent bad or good news that happened. So, for example, in 69, Nixon declared or coined the term the war on drugs.
I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Yes, you did. And the other thing that's really fascinating, when you look back at the beginning of the war on drugs, or as I like to call it, the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, because you can't turn on TV without seeing a drug ad, right? But what's really interesting when you look back in the history of this is how much racism and control of dissent had to do with criminalizing cannabis. Because we're talking about Vietnam War, bra burning, draft card burning, people fleeing to Canada, conscientious objectors. And Nixon wanted a way to clamp down on all those long-haired, liberal, hippie protesters. Couldn't lock them up for having long hair, but you could lock them up for what they smoked. And that's what he did. He declared the war on drugs. And here's a couple great quotes here from Nixon. Gives you an idea. These came from his diaries and the tapes that he recorded at the White House. First quote here. You have to face the fact that the whole problem is really the blacks. The key is to devise a system that recognizes this all without appearing to. So a secret way to control the minorities is part of why they wanted to make cannabis illegal. And the other statement. I want a goddamn strong statement on marijuana. I mean one that just tears the ass out of them. You know, it's a funny thing. Every one of those bastards out there that are for legalizing marijuana are Jewish. So anti-Semitism and racism at the core of Nixon's belief here with regard to cannabis. Now, because of this, Nixon wanted to put together some backing for his feelings. He knew that coming forth and saying, you know, those kind of things in public, that's not going to fly. So he wanted some scientific backup as to why we should criminalize cannabis, and he commissioned what was called the Schaefer Commission. Former Pennsylvania Governor Raymond P. Schaefer, very conservative Republican governor of Pennsylvania, former governor, was commissioned to do a study on cannabis, and in 1972, that commission came back and recommended decriminalization. Nixon took that survey and tossed it in the garbage can, completely ignored it. And just as every study has ever shown, every study that's ever looked at this, they've all recommended decriminalization. And by the way, Governor Schaefer wasn't Jewish either. He was part of the Church of Christ. So much for the every one of those bastards quote. Now, as time goes on, people in Normal and other organizations are really excited about the prospects of marijuana legalization. Like I said, this steep curve here made it look like it was about to happen any moment. And in fact, there's a joke at Normal's national office that we can't wait till it's 1978. Because back when Normal was founded, Keith Strop said, look at this, by 1978, it'll surely be legal. Well, we know what happened then. As we move into 1974 through 1979, we have a change of administration. Nixon has to leave office in disgrace. Ford takes over for a few years, and then Jimmy Carter is elected. And this is some amazing times in marijuana law reform. Up until this time, this was the biggest time for the possibility of marijuana legalization in our country. We have a couple new data points to look at. Number one, at this point, the U.S. government is starting to survey how many people have ever smoked pot. And 28% of the American people admitted to a federal pollster on the telephone that they smoke pot. So I always like to think it's probably a bigger number than that, because, you know, who wants to admit they're breaking state and federal law to a stranger? But still, 28% of the people have tried marijuana. Now, another thing that's happening along this time, we see the polls are starting to go up to as high as 30% by the time we hit 1978. The American soldiers are coming back from Vietnam in 1975, and they're bringing some amazing cannabis strains with them, and they're leading a revolution in cultivation and growing that continues to this day. And then something really amazing happens in 76. Jimmy Carter, we know, ran for president in 76. He was the governor of Georgia. This next quote I'm playing for you is not when he was president. This is something he said on the campaign trail on national network television while running for president.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
A presidential candidate actually openly saying we ought to decriminalize pot, and he won. He won the presidency. So we were so excited in the marijuana law reform community. We're like, it's inevitable. We got a president now who supports us. And in fact, in 77, went before Congress and asked that they decriminalize marijuana, and saying, quote, penalties against drug use should not be more damaging to an individual than the use of the drug itself. And nowhere is that more clear than in the laws of against possession of marijuana in private for personal use. So everything's going great. You know, the polls are up. People's recognition of cannabis is through the roof. We've got a friendly president. High Times magazine is formed, right? So more people are talking about it. It's becoming a popular topic. And then something terrible happens, and it's called cocaine. Marijuana was just about to be legalized, and then cocaine slips into the picture with a couple of terrible things. Number one, at the time, in the late 70s, people didn't really differentiate between pot and coke. They were both party drugs. Let's go have fun. We can have some pot. We can have some coke. Either way, they're pretty much harmless. They're just good time. Well, we learned later, of course, that this wasn't true. And so whenever cocaine popped up, it was always linked to pot. In fact, if you go back to the late 70s and check out High Times magazine, they used to have covers with lines of cocaine on them and centerfolds of cocaine where the centerfolds of buds usually are. So there was this linkage between coke and pot that was very strong. Now, in 1978, they didn't have drug policy advisors, but he did have a guy called a special assistant on health issues, Dr. Peter Bourne. He went to a normal party in 1978 in Washington, D.C., that it was rumored where cocaine was being used. A Washington Post reporter went up to Keith Straub and asked him if cocaine was being used by President Carter's main health guy. And Keith, unfortunately, said, "I can neither confirm nor deny." Now, in Washington speak, that means, and that sunk Peter Bourne's career, and it put so much political heat on Carter that he had to back away from the whole legalization issue. One other thing is happening in 1978 as well. This is the creation of the Investigative New Drug Program. How many people in here knew that there's federal medical marijuana? A couple of you? A few? Yeah, there's actually, the federal government grows marijuana for people at the University of Mississippi, grows marijuana for four remaining patients on this program that started in 1978. What happened is this guy named Robert Randall had glaucoma, and he was going blind. And he found that when he smoked pot, it eased his glaucoma symptoms, and he wasn't losing his sight. So he sued the federal government and said, "Hey, I've got to use pot, or I'm going to go blind. It's not fair to put me in jail to try to prevent my blindness." And the Supreme Court agreed. This led to the creation of the Investigative New Drug Program, where the federal government would take people in who would... basically, it was a program created for one guy, created for Robert Randall. But eventually, some other people sued to get onto the program. The program got as high as 28 people on the program. Only four of them are still alive. I've met two of them, Irv Rosenfeld in Florida and LV Musica in Oregon, are still alive. They receive a tin this big, with about 300 pre-rolled joints in it, about 9 ounces a month from the federal government. And yet, the federal government wants to tell you it's not medicine, even though they give it to four people a month. So this takes us through the 1970s. So lots of good news happening, but again, cocaine rears its ugly head. And when we get hit the 1980s, it gets real bad. We get the election of Ronald Reagan, a very staunch anti-drug guy. We have 29% of the American people now are now admitting that they have used cannabis in their lifetime. Now, in the 1980s is where the cocaine starts to take the effect of away from the reform of cannabis. Richard Pryor sets himself on fire in 1980 trying to freebase cocaine. 1983, John Belushi dies of a cocaine and heroin overdose. Len Bias, a number one draft pick from the Boston Celtics, dies from cocaine. And since cocaine and weed were so tied together, as bad as coke was, that's how bad weed was. And in fact, you can tell that in this quote from Ronald Reagan, who literally said on national TV, "Well, I now have absolute proof that smoking even one marijuana cigarette is equal to brain damage to being on Bikini Island during an H-bomb blast." The President of the United States on national TV telling people that cannabis is as bad as nuclear fallout. So that's the mentality that's going on in the 80s. And I'm a bit older. Anybody here grew up in the 80s? Am I the old guy in the room? There we go. Okay, cool. So you guys remember this?
I know it seems like such a simple message, just say no, but it's an important one.
That was Nancy Reagan, the president's wife, on the World Series telecast in the booth with Joe Buck and whoever the other guy was doing the World Series telling people to just say no. And that started that whole anti-drug campaign. In 1983, we get DARE, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education, founded by the Los Angeles Police Department, where cops come in to tell kids about drugs. And I talk to so many young people these days, and I say, when was the first time you ever saw a drug? And they say, when the DARE cop showed it to us. Yeah, they had no impact, no drugs around them in their school until a cop comes and shows it to them. It's almost like advertising. And in fact, it was a lot like advertising in the 80s, too. There was the big crack cocaine scare back then. And they used to say, oh, this crack, it's deadly addictive. It'll get you super high. It's really, really cheap, and it gets you really, really high. Don't use it. So that's kind of what was going on in the 80s. But lest you think I'm picking on just Republicans, Democrats are equally to blame. Now, I do have to make one quick note. This man right here, Jack Herer, is one of my idols. He wrote a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And this was the only good news we had in the 80s. His book basically unearthed a lot of the secrets about cannabis and hemp and our history and the Hemp for Victory program and so on. And without him, I wouldn't be here because he's what motivated me to tell people the truth about it. Jack passed away this last Thursday. So I'm dedicating this show to the memory of Jack Herer. Now, the Democrats are equally bad. And check out these poll numbers. We were up at 30%. In the late 70s, dropping down to 16% by the time we hit the mid-80s. So that whole cocaine equals pot scare was really taking root in people's heads because most people that didn't do pot or coke didn't know anything about it, so they just assumed that the government was telling them had to be true. Bad assumption. But in 86, we get the Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, Democrat from Massachusetts, leading the fight for mandatory minimum sentencing that still exists today. In 1987, a Supreme Court nominee named Judge Douglas Ginsburg lost his Supreme Court nomination because he was asked, "Have you ever smoked pot?" And he said, "Well, yeah, back when I went to Harvard, I smoked some pot in college." Lost his gig. No chance at the Supreme Court for just admitting that 20 years prior, he had smoked pot. This is in 1987. And in 88, Joe Biden, you might recognize this guy, that's the vice president now. Back when he was a senator, he created the Drug Czar's office. There would be no drug czar if not for Joe Biden. Joe Biden also pioneered what is called the 100-to-1 crack to powder disparity, which says that if you're caught with a gram of powder cocaine, if you're caught with a gram of crack cocaine, you get the same penalty as someone caught with 100 grams of powder cocaine. What's the difference between crack and powder? Poor minority people use crack. Rich white people use powder. And yet, it's 100 times worse penalty if you're caught with the poor man's coke. So that's what was going on in the 80s with all this stuff. We also get the Partnership for Drug-Free America is formed, the Drug Policy Alliance, and more anti-drug groups continuing on. All right, let's keep going here. As we get to the 90s, of course, we get 31% more and more people now are starting to admit that they have tried cannabis. President Bush the Smarter in 1991. Sorry, I can't help myself. President Bush the Smarter in 1991. Remember I told you about that federal medical marijuana program for the 28 people? By 1991, it had grown to 28 people, and the AIDS epidemic was hitting. And these AIDS patients started to realize when they smoked pot, they could eat, and they didn't waste away. suddenly the federal government was getting thousands and thousands of applications from gay and lesbian people in San Francisco and other areas of California wanting to get their medical marijuana, so he shut down the program. Rather than letting AIDS patients get some relief from pot that he was already shipping out to 28 people in the country, he closed the program. Now, they grandfathered in the people who were still in the program, and that's why four of them still get weed to this day. But now, nobody else can ever join this program. But we do get some good news. In 1992, President Bill Clinton is elected after having said this.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I've smoked a lot of pot. I don't know how you do it without inhaling. I'm not sure how that possibly works. But anyway, the amazing thing about this, though, is that, remember, 5 years before, Douglas Ginsburg lost his Supreme Court career. Now, 5 years later, this guy's becoming president, having basically said the same thing. So that's how much attitudes changed with the change in leadership there. Now, we move on to the second term of Clinton. We get 35% of Americans now have tried marijuana. The polls are starting to go up. We're getting to 23% now. It's starting to rise. Even one poll up here above 40%. So it's quite amazing. And, of course, the major, major news that happens in 1996, California becomes the first state to legalize the medicinal use of marijuana through Proposition 215. And the reason they did so, we have to thank George Bush the Smarter. If George Bush the Smarter had just let those AIDS patients get into the federal program, Dennis Perone and all those activists in San Francisco would have never fought to get Prop 215 protections for those same AIDS patients. So thank you, George H.W. Bush, for letting us provide medical marijuana to people in kind of a strange way. But the Clinton administration, being sensitive to being considered soft on drugs because he didn't inhale, had Rahm Emanuel. Now, do you recognize that name? That's President Obama's chief of staff now. Rahm Emanuel led up a program to punish doctors for talking about marijuana. California passed Prop 216, and the Clinton administration said, if any of you California doctors recommend pot, we're taking your license. Now, this went to the Supreme Court, and eventually the Supreme Court said, you can't stop a doctor's free speech right. But for about 5 years there, we were terrified that the feds were going to come in and start taking away doctors' rights. Even despite that, though, three more states, Alaska, Oregon, and Washington, end up legalizing medicinal marijuana just 2 years later. So the die has already been cast. The momentum is already going, even though the federal government's still trying to stop it. Then we get to this Bush, George Bush the other. And in his election here, we see even more medical marijuana states are starting to come on board. Maine becomes the first state to pass medical marijuana through a legislative process. Hawaii, through a legislative process. Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Maine. So we get more and more medical marijuana states. Other good news from the science front, the Institute of Medicine in 1999 was asked to take a look at the concept of the gateway theory that, marijuana would turn you into a heroin addict. And the federal government's own Institute of Medicine said, there is, not only does pot use not lead to harder drugs, it's not even a good predictor of whether or not someone will move on to harder drugs. And in fact, for every 108 people who ever try pot, only one moves on to any other harder drug out of 108 people. Now, also we get that 2003 Supreme Court decision that says the doctors have their free speech rights. They can recommend medical marijuana. We see the polls going up to 31%, getting some pretty high poll numbers here. And then, just for fun, we got this quote from George.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America. Use less drugs. That kind of sounds, that's not just say no, it's just slow down, right? Just slow down a little. All right, and so after George Bush leaves office, the momentum continues to where we are now with President Barack Obama, who gets elected after saying this.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Indeed, that was the point. So we've gone from Douglas Ginsburg in 87 losing his whole career, Bill Clinton having to wink, wink, nudge, nudge about it, to Barack Obama being just open and honest, not only that he did marijuana, but he did cocaine as well. And by this point, now enough people are educated about it. We've got 41% of the people who have tried it. So you can't really lie to them that, and say that marijuana is like Coke, because now they know. They've had enough experience in history to know that's not true. We also get more states passing medical marijuana: Vermont, Montana, Rhode Island, New Mexico, Michigan, and New Jersey. Interesting thing about Michigan. This Michigan passed medical marijuana in the 2008 election between Obama and McCain. Medical marijuana passed in every county in Michigan. 83 out of 83 counties, even the counties that voted for McCain, voted for medical marijuana. And statewide, medical marijuana got more votes than Barack Obama did. So we're starting to see how popular this issue is, even in conservative-type Midwest states, northeastern states like New Jersey and so on. A couple of other good notes here. The Marijuana Policy Project is formed in 95. Dr. Tashkin, this is a good note to know. The federal government, of course, is always looking for information on how bad marijuana is for you to bolster their prohibition. They got this guy, Dr. Donald Tashkin, some grants from the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, did a 30-year case control study on pot smokers trying to link marijuana smoking to lung cancer. And he found, and this was in the Washington Post in 2006, not only did we not find an association between pot smoking and lung cancer, we found a suggestion of protective effect. When they did the stats, they found not only did pot smokers not have a higher incidence of lung, head, neck, throat cancer, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, they had less risk than people who don't smoke anything at all. Pot smokers, less risk of lung cancer, head and neck cancer than people who don't smoke anything at all. So that's just some amazing news coming out of here. And he said also, Tashkin, he said, when I first started doing this research, I thought we ought to ban keep marijuana illegal because of the negative health effects. But now, based on my newest research, I would be in support of legalization. The government's leading researcher on the harms of marijuana now says he's for legalization. And check out our poll numbers. We are finally getting a poll at the end of December, the Angus Reid poll, 53% nationwide support for marijuana legalization. So that's where we've been. And where we're at now, I want to break down some of this support. The Gallup poll is a little more reliable because it's been so consistent over years. They've been doing it since the late 60s, early 70s. This is the breakdown of this latest Gallup poll that showed a 44% support for marijuana legalization. We can see people in the West, a majority support legalization. That's us. Age group, people age 18 to 49 support legalization. Not surprising, right? Younger people are more likely to support it. Democrats more likely than Republicans. But I like this number. The independents are even close to supporting it. And liberals much more so than moderates or conservatives. The big number to pay attention to, though, here, this right here. Women, 44%. 4 years prior, the support among women was 32%. Support among women has gone up 12 points in 4 years. And that's why we're seeing such a popular notions for reform now. Because just like alcohol prohibition, when mothers get involved, when women get involved, it changes. Now, here's a little graph I like to give you to talk about people's perceptions of marijuana. When we do surveys and ask people about medical, they almost always support it. Nationwide, up to 80% of people support medical marijuana. But this comes from an interesting survey in Minnesota when they were trying to pass medical. They asked people, do you support medical marijuana? 3 out of 4 of them will say, yes, I support medical marijuana. Then they ask them a second question. Does your neighbor support medical marijuana? 3 out of 4 of them say no. Our federal government has convinced half of the people that the other half hate medical marijuana when really 3 out of 4 of them support it. It's amazing what propaganda can do to you. I call this the my neighbor hates pot paradox. All right, so that gets us to where we're at now. We've seen the history, how the polls have gone up. Why is it so popular now? Why are those polls going up? What's the big changes? Well, we did see that 44% of the people have tried it now, so they've got personal experience, and that's part of it. But there are some other reasons. This is a graph of the total number of marijuana users aged 12 and over in the United States. And as you can see, when we start in 87, there's about 50 million pot smokers. By 2008, the latest figure we have, 102 million people in the United States will use cannabis. Now, of course, the population's gone up as well. So if you look at that as a percentage, we've gone from about 28% support, or 28% of the people who've tried it, to now, like we mentioned earlier, about 41% of the people have tried it. So just the demographics are part of why it's so popular now. Enough people have tried it that they don't believe it's so scary anymore. Here's another demographic. We got the red line represents people 18 to 25. Green is 26 to 34. Blue is 35 to 49. And purple is 50 or older. If you are 50 or younger, it's a 50-50 shot that you've tried marijuana. Basically, I like to say if you meet someone under 50, flip a coin. Heads, they've smoked pot. Tails, they know someone who has. And even the baby boomers, as they get older, have gone from about 16% to about 33% of them that have tried cannabis. And this is the fastest growing demographic of cannabis users. The ages of 55 to 59 have grown threefold over the past 4 years. That's because their kids are gone out of the house, they're retired, they can sit back, roll a J, and that's what they're doing now. Here's something that might stun you. The prevalence and frequency of how often people use cannabis. In the 18 to 25 year old group, 28% of people aged 18 to 25 will smoke marijuana at least once this year. Now, the increasing levels of green here tell you how often. People down here, 7.3%, maybe once a year. People up here, twice a week or more. 11.2% of young people aged 18 to 25 will smoke pot at least twice a week. Wow, more than 10%. But then, once they hit 26 to 34, that drops in half. And once they hit 35 to 49, it drops almost in half. And once they hit 50 or older, it drops in half again. So much for that super addictive new pot, huh? People just give it up as they get older. If it were as addictive as they're trying to claim it is, wouldn't this kind of stay steady, don't you think? Anyway, these are part of the reasons why it's so popular now, is so many people are using it. It's just since they're criminals, they can't admit it openly to their friends. So, in America, we've had marijuana has been illegal since 1937. We've had the war on drugs since the 1970s. But our heritage with hemp goes back all the way to the founding of this country. So how is it that you get an entire country to hate something that they all loved? Because when we look at our history, the Jamestown Colony was founded in 1611. They were the first hemp plantation that wasn't from the Native Americans, but the first hemp plantation here in the American colonies. The American colonists could pay their taxes with hemp. And, in fact, in Virginia, they were required by law to grow an acre of hemp. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were drafted on hemp paper by hemp farmers, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and so on. The old Ironsides, all of our Navy sailing ships had hemp sails and hemp ropes and hemp rigging. Our covered wagons came across the West with covered in hemp and using hemp oil for their lamps. In the late 1800s, cannabis was even known as a medicine. You could get it in cannabis bottles, little tinctures and other sorts of medicines you could get all the way up until the 1920s. And even after cannabis was made illegal in 1937, the federal government began a program in 1942 called Hemp for Victory that allowed exceptions for Midwest farmers to grow hemp for the war effort because the Japanese had cut off our sources from the Philippines. So hemp has been with us for a long time. How is it that we take a country that knows all about hemp, that knows all about cannabis, and convince them it needs to be illegal? You change its name. You call it marijuana. Everybody knew cannabis was good. Everybody knew hemp was good. But marijuana, why, that's a scary Mexican word. Ooh. And that's exactly what happened. The original laws to make cannabis illegal sprung up in the Southwest of America when the Mexican immigrants were coming in. They're coming to take our jobs. They came in and to arrest the Mexicans, they made their drug illegal. Same thing goes for the black jazz musicians in the American South, in Louisiana and the birthplace of jazz, make their drug illegal so that you could bust them. So what happens with our heritage is that we get 70 years of propaganda to try to fool us, to try to keep these things out of our mind. They tell us that we'll hallucinate and jump out a window, or that the darkies will look at the white women. These are literal quotes from the newspapers at the time. Anything you see in quotes, taken from newspapers. One puff and you'll be a murderous psycho. You'll kill someone with an axe. Or you'll take up heroin. It's a gateway to heroin. You'll be a hard drug addict. And it's not medicine. You're just getting high. It's not helping you. And it's 40 times worse than cigarettes. It'll kill you. It's awful. And you'll get man boobs. You'll get the dreaded man boobs if you smoke pot. Oh, my God. And it'll cause cancer, and you're going to die. You're all going to die of cancer from marijuana. You'll be an amotivated loser. You'll never get anywhere in life. You'll sit in front of the couch smoking the bong. You're going to get schizophrenia. You'll probably go insane. You're going to go mad. You know, it's not good for your sex life. You know, the bad things will happen in your sex life, and you'll never get a job. You'll just be a loser. You'll never have a job. You're just amotivated, and my God, what about the children? What kind of message do we want to send to the children? And, you know, stoners, they're not sexy. They're dirty, and they're hairy, and they smell. And, oh, it'll mess up your chromosomes, too, right? You smoke pot and try to have a kid, it'll have, you know, three arms and two, you know, eye point over here. It'll be awful. And, you know, oh, okay, so medical marijuana is okay, but smoked medical isn't. That's not really good. And it's 400 times more potent than what your parents smoked at Woodstock. And before you know it, you've forgotten all about cannabis and hemp. You've been fed these lies for 70 years, and it's obscured our history. It's obscured our heritage. But slowly but surely, people are starting to realize these are lies. 40 years of fighting back is starting to make a difference. They said you'd be a murderous psycho. Well, we smoked with our friends, and we found out there was no murders. Everybody just kind of giggled and had a good time. Oops, let me go back there. I went too quick. I clicked too much. So yeah, nobody became a murderous psycho. Everybody was pretty mellow and chill. You know, we had a good time. And hallucinating and jumping out the window. Well, we smoked some pot and we didn't jump out any windows. We did giggle. We giggled a lot. That was kind of fun. And you know, this whole thing about the man boobs. Well, smoking pot doesn't cause man boobs. Eating Doritos causes man boobs. And we saw all those skinny hippies at Woodstock. They didn't have man boobs, so what's up with that? And the uppity darky stuff, well, we had this thing called the Civil Rights Movement. You know, you can't really say that kind of stuff. That's ridiculous. Nobody believes that anymore. No medical value. But the federal government sent it out to that guy that had glaucoma. So how could it not be medical if the federal government's sending out to a guy with glaucoma? And heroin? Gateway to heroin? No, it's the gateway to Doritos, man. Plus, we've got old hippies. Willie Nelson never did heroin. I mean, he seems okay. Damage our chromosomes? Are you kidding me? I've seen hippie kids. There's no pothead mutants. They all look fine. They all seem happy and healthy and working fine. 40 times worse than cigarette smoking. Well, Dr. Tashkin came out and found out that wasn't true. And besides, we see tobacco smokers die and the pot smokers never died. That was cool. Increase the risk of schizophrenia? Well, not really. We found that schizophrenia has stayed at 1% for the past 40 years, no matter how much people smoke pot. And as far as the sexual side effects, Willie Nelson has 9 kids, okay? The Rastafarians haven't died out yet. I mean, come on. It's 400 times more potent than Woodstock weed. Have you seen the pictures of people at Woodstock? They were smoking some good weed, okay? Always has been good weed. You'll have no good career options unless you're Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or John McCain or George Bush or John Kerry or Al Gore, who all smoked pot. It'll cause cancer and you'll die? Well, no, it won't. We found out that not only that, it might help protect against cancer. That's amazing. Smoked marijuana is not medicine. Well, not according to 14 states. 14 states have legalized it, and the American Medical Association has said smoked marijuana is medicine. My God, what about the children? Well, guess what? In every state that passed medical marijuana, the rates of teen use went down faster than they went down in the states without medical marijuana. And stoners aren't sexy? Look around you. So legalization's almost here. But there's one obstacle still in the way. That whole morality of it. You'll be an amotivated stoner, slacker, loser, nobody, no good, never account, never amount to nothing. And it's always been tough to fight that because when we talk about, well, Bill Clinton turned out okay and Barack Obama turned out okay, they always come back and say, yeah, but he did it when he was a kid. He's not smoking pot now. And then, in 2009, on my birthday, this brick got obliterated. Wondering, how did I get the audio of him smoking a bong? I was there in South Carolina. This picture came out in January 31st, 2009, and I believe was one of the biggest game changers in society's views toward marijuana, because now they couldn't say, oh, it was back when he was a kid. This is a guy smoking pot now who not only set six world records at the Olympics and won 8 gold medals, he set the world record for the number of world records set at the Olympics at one time. So, and the other thing too is that it's a bong. It's not a joint. If it's a joint, you can kind of say, oh, experimented first time, just having a good time. Pulling a Ruhr bong, that's a pro. Okay? This isn't a first timer. Now, aside from the whole public relations angle of this, the idea that, yes, someone who is successful, someone who's the best at what they do in the world, can also be a pot smoker, there was a couple of other things that happened in this incident that really were game changers. First of all, Kellogg's. Come on, Kellogg's. There we go. Kellogg's was a sponsor, or had Michael Phelps as one of their celebrity sponsors. And after the bong smoking incident, they dropped him like a hot potato. Now, at the time of the picture being taken, Kellogg's was ranked by a company called Vano Industries. Vano Industries ranks companies' brands by how popular they are, how well-liked they are, how profitable they are, etc. And out of 5,600 brands in America, Kellogg's was number 9. In the world, in America. Number 9 in America of all 5,600 brands surveyed. After they dropped Michael Phelps, and the last time I was able to check this was November of 2009, their ranking dropped to 312. They dropped from number 9 to 312. And if you think about it, the company that makes Frosted Flakes, Pop-Tarts, and Cheez-Its pissing off stoners, not a good plan. Not a good plan. Also, money. This sent a shot across the bow of corporate America. This is the stock chart of Kellogg's stock from the day of the photo till 6 weeks after. It started trading at $45 a share before the Phelps photo, traded at $36 a share just 6 weeks later, dropped 20% in value after they dropped Michael Phelps. Now, to compare and contrast, Subway is also a company that had Michael Phelps as a sponsor. They held off and they didn't drop him. And in fact, they have got him now in a bunch of new advertising campaigns. And I swear to you, this is the actual website address. SubwayFreshBuzz.com. Do you think they're marketing to a certain audience here? Oh, and by the way, while he was off, Michael Phelps did happen to set a new world record in the 100-meter butterfly and the 200-meter butterfly. So much for that whole amotivational syndrome. Part 3. So, we've figured out where we've been, how the polls have gone up and down. We figured out kind of what's happening today that's making this so popular. So, what's the driving forces that are helping this along? Well, first of all, the economy. We've had that big financial meltdown. Stocks went crazy. And California started talking about legalization. And their tax board said that they could make $1.4 billion by taxing cannabis. And the states are starting to see the dollar signs, even leading the governor to say this.
Californians support legalizing and taxing marijuana use.
I think it's time for debate. And I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana and other drugs.
I think that's a great idea. Portugal has legalized all their drugs, all personal possession of drugs since 2001. They've seen all their addiction rates plummet. They've seen all their tax revenues go up. They've seen crime go down. So, yes, Governor, I think we should look at what other countries are doing. Also, we've got medical marijuana that's currently thriving, and Barack Obama promised this.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
Well, what the president said during the campaign, you'll be surprised to know, will be consistent with what we'll be doing here in law enforcement. He was my boss during the campaign. He is formally and technically and by law my boss now. And so what he said during the campaign is now American policy.
Those two quotes from Obama and from the Attorney General Eric Holder have acted as a big old checkered flag for the marijuana industries in California and Colorado, which you've probably all heard about California and how many dispensaries they have, so many dispensaries, over 500 by last count. Colorado, Denver, Colorado, is actually the pot dispensary capital of America. Per capita, Denver has more dispensaries than Los Angeles. LA's got about 500. Last year, in 2009, when I went to the Aspen Legal Seminar in June, they had 30. Now they have 230. 230 dispensaries in the Denver area alone. Even to the point now where other businesses are using those dispensaries in their advertisements. There's a sushi restaurant in Denver that posts their locations and then also posts the locations of where all the dispensaries are around them. And they say, once you get the munchies, come in for sushi. So it's starting to become more and more mainstream. The other thing that's turning people away from turning people to the idea of re-legalization is the Mexican drug war. 60 to 70% of the profits that the Mexican drug trafficking organizations make are through the trafficking of marijuana. Marijuana that we could very easily grow for ourselves right here in America. Now, this is an old slide because this number is updated. 18,000 Mexican citizens have died in the past 3 years over this Mexican drug war. This is a pile of bodies. This is not an uncommon photo. In the city of Juarez, Mexico, Juarez is right about there across from, right about there across from El Paso. The city of Juarez averages 7 murders a day. And not just shot in the back of the head murders. We're talking like hands cut off, decapitations. There was one Mexican drug trafficker named El Sapole, the soup maker. He would take his victims alive and put them in a 55-gallon drum of acid. This is what's going on in Mexico because the government says we can't grow our own marijuana. So a lot of people are looking at legalization as a way of cutting the profits of these drug trafficking organizations. And another thing is that Americans are just getting sick of war. Sick of a war on drugs that doesn't work. This is an amazing graph here. From the beginning of our country through the 19th century, this is the total amount of months America was at war. Revolutionary War, 1812, Mexican-American War, Civil War, and so on. These are all our 20th and 21st century wars from World War I, II, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. This is the war on drugs. The war on drugs, and that's bigger than that now. It's now 40 years or so on that we've been going on this war on drugs. Another reason that we're having so much change now is the internet. People can now get information about cannabis and ask questions about cannabis without identifying themselves. So Normal has taken advantage of that. Here's a good look at how marijuana reform dominates the internet. Normal and MPP and High Times are three websites that support legalization. This is the Drug Czar's website, and this is the Drug Free America website, and this is a look at their relative share of internet traffic. This blue line here is Normal. This red line down here is the Drug Czar. So people are far more interested in marijuana law reform than what the government has to say. Let's get past this real quick. Now, another thing that happened, people have become used to this idea and are starting to look at marijuana law reform, and they're demanding that our government change this. President Obama, deciding that he wanted to have a transparent administration, held this thing called Open for Questions, where he asked people on the internet to send in their questions about what the government should do. The number one question asked, will you consider legalizing marijuana so that the government can regulate it, tax it, put age limits on it, and create millions of new jobs and create a billion-dollar industry right here in the U.S.? Number one question. So how did President Obama react to that?
We took votes about which questions were going to be asked. And I think 3 million people voted, or 3.5 million people voted. I have to say that there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high, and that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. And I don't know what this says about the online audience, but I just want, I don't want people to think that this was a fairly popular question. We want to make sure that it was answered. The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
So when the American people come to
our economy, so
to petition him for redress of our grievances regarding marijuana laws, we get laughed at. Even though it was the not only just the number one question on this poll, but the other poll, the second time they ran the poll, and it was 2 of the top 10, 6 of the top 20, 16 of the top 50, and 31 of the top 100 questions all had to do with either legalizing hemp, medical marijuana, decriminalization, something like that, and we still get laughed at. Also, when we talk about the war on drugs, it's important to recognize that half of the war on drugs is on marijuana. This represents marijuana possession and sales as the percentage of all drug arrests. 44% of all drug arrests are from simple marijuana possession, 850,000 people a year. This is why the drug war continues, because this represents a big clientele for drug rehabs, for prisons, for defense lawyers, for all sorts of people that need to make money off of you getting arrested. Whereas cocaine and heroin, synthetic drugs like meth, other drugs like mushrooms and so on, far less than half. I also have this map that kind of shows you the current state of marijuana reform in the United States. There's a lot of detail on this. You can get it at the website. There's the cards back there. You can get the website. I did want to point out just one quick thing, because some people think medical marijuana is so great. You know, we got medical. Why do we need to fight for legalization? Because if you're a patient here, you're a criminal there. Your Washington card doesn't mean a thing in Oregon. My Oregon card doesn't mean a thing in Washington. And yet, in Oregon, you can have 24 ounces. In Washington, you can have 24 ounces. In Oregon, there's 8 conditions that'll get you a card. In Washington, there's 8 conditions that'll get you a card. In Oregon, I can see Dr. Smith and get my card. In Washington, that same Dr. Smith is issuing cards. And yet, if I cross the Columbia River into Vancouver, I'm a criminal. If the patient in Washington crosses into Portland, they're a criminal. Medical marijuana is not good enough because it only protects you in one particular state, except for Montana, Michigan, and Rhode Island. Those are the only 3 states that'll recognize anybody's medical marijuana card from any state. See these red police cars? These are places that have per se zero tolerance DUID laws. What that means, if you're pulled over by a cop there and they take a urinalysis and you show up positive for marijuana, you're a drunk driver. Now, how long do marijuana metabolites stay in your system after you've smoked? 20 days, 28 days? Big guy like me who smokes every day, maybe 2 months. I can't drive in these states without being a drunk driver, even though I'm perfectly sober. This is why medical's not good enough. You're still a second-class citizen. All right, finally, to wrap things up here, we're looking at legalization with I-1068 and in California, the tax cannabis 2010, in Oregon with OCTA. The opponents are going to come out and try to scare you. So how do we respond to some of their scare tactics? One of the things I'll say is, the well-financed drug legalizers just want to get high. No, we don't. We want to end the corruption of law enforcement. We want to protect our civil liberties. We want to bring that black market economy above ground so that it can contribute to the rest of society. We want to unlock all the medical potential of cannabis, restore our hemp, and save our children from the dangers of drugs. By the way, speaking of the well-financed drug lobby, this is the government's budget. This is normal's budget. If you don't see a lot of green there, it's because we don't see a lot of green here. They outdo our budget. They have 1,550 times the budget we do, and yet you saw that website graph, how we're getting like 5 times the traffic. Another thing they'll say, my God, what about the children? To which I always say, yeah, what about the children? Because what's going on now is hurting the children. 70% of high school sophomores, 80% of high school seniors say marijuana is easy to get now. That's because no one's checking their ID, right? Kids constantly say it's easier to get marijuana than it is to get beer because they're checking IDs for beer. Because people that sell beer will lose their license if they sell to someone who's underage. Because if you want to go get beer, you have to show an ID for it sometimes at an adult store. 42% of our American high school seniors have tried marijuana now. 1 million teenagers are dealing marijuana now. So when they say, what about the children? I say, yeah, what about the children? Because what we're doing isn't working now. Let's try something different. By the way, teen tobacco smoking has dropped to its lowest rates ever recorded. Not because we arrested adults for it, but because we educated and brought over some health education and some public service campaigns. To give you an idea about this, this is marijuana consumption. Starting from 88 through 2008, 30% lifetime among high school seniors to 41% now among high school seniors. This is the monthly use, or I'm sorry, this is annual use and monthly use. So the illegal cannabis has gone up. Keeping it illegal hasn't stopped people from doing it. In fact, more people are doing it. The illegal drugs have all gone up. Cocaine, crack, meth, inhalants, hallucinogens, heroin, they've all gone up. Keeping them illegal is not stopping people from doing them. But the red represents alcohol. The purple represents tobacco. They've all gone down. The use of the legal drugs has gone down through education and regulation, not through prohibition. Here's one of my favorites. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. Oh, the pot they smoked in the 60s and 70s, why, that was only 2% THC, and now it's 30 or 50 or whatever they want to make up. Well, once again, I always wonder, if the pot back then wasn't so bad, why were they arresting people for it? Right? If it's so bad now, but not so bad then, can we go back to smoking that? No, they're still going to arrest you for it. The potency, by the way, is irrelevant. The federal government allows a prescription pill called Marinol that's 100% potent, and yet they never seem to complain about that. It's not a gateway drug. I already told you about how the Institutes of Medicine said that it's not a predictor of drug abuse. And this whole idea that cannabis is deadly and addictive, well, first of all, cannabis is non-toxic. The DEA's own administrative law judge was quoted as saying it would take 1,500 pounds of cannabis smoked by a 150-pound man in 15 minutes to kill him. Now, I know some people who've tried, but they haven't succeeded yet. And when we talk about addiction, only 9% of the people who ever try cannabis become dependent, as compared to 16% of the people who try alcohol and 35% of the people who try tobacco. And speaking of deadly, here's another nice little graph for you called therapeutic index. A therapeutic index is a measure of the ratio of an effective dose versus the ratio of a deadly dose. Alcohol has a 1 to 10 ratio. What that means is whatever it takes to get you a buzz, if you drink 10 times that much, you're going to die. So it depends on your size. Me, I drink 3-4 shots, I'll get a buzz. If I drink 30 or 40 shots, I'll die, right? All these drugs are safer than alcohol, to the point where cannabis has a 1 in 20,000 ratio. Whatever gets you high, smoke 20,000 times that, and you'll die. Well, nobody can smoke that much. Even things we think of as dangerous drugs like codeine or ecstasy or cocaine, snorted cocaine is safer than alcohol when you compare the effective dose to the deadly dose. And then things like nutmeg. Nutmeg is actually more dangerous than alcohol. Nutmeg's a hallucinogen, by the way. And speaking of addictiveness, this was a chart that was made up for the National Institutes of Drug Abuse comparing 5 different categories of addiction: dependence, withdrawal, tolerance, reinforcement, and intoxication. And you can see how marijuana is about the same level as caffeine in addictiveness. It's a little more intoxicating. That's true. It's more intoxicating than coffee, but except here in Washington, right? But so just about the same level of addiction. And yet alcohol and nicotine, both legal, very deadly. Here's one I love hearing. They say, well, we've got enough problems with alcohol and tobacco. Why would we want to add another drug? We're not adding another drug. It's here already. 22.5 million Americans will smoke marijuana this year. all these things, when they say, well, we don't want to add another legal drug, make you think, like, nobody's doing it now, and then suddenly everybody will start smoking once it's legal. That's not the case. It's already the third most popular drug in America. It's already a cash crop worth more than wheat and corn combined. So it's not going to change really a whole lot what's going on. People that already smoke pot will continue to smoke pot. And this idea that there'd be some sort of social harm, the pot zombies roaming the streets, this idea is that, well, we have taxes on alcohol and tobacco, but they don't bring in as much money as the costs in healthcare costs and drunk driving and all of that. Well, the reason for that, alcohol and tobacco are addictive and will kill you. That's why they cost more. In fact, a study was done in California on this very subject. Canada on this very subject. And they found in Canada, the healthcare cost, what does it cost per smoker per year to take care of them? Tobacco smokers cost Canada $800 per year each. Alcohol drinkers cost $165 each. Cannabis smokers cost $20. But then, compare that to what we're spending to keep it enforced. It costs $153 to enforce alcohol laws, costs about zero to enforce tobacco laws, costs $328 per smoker to enforce cannabis laws. So basically, Canada is spending $328 per smoker to save $20. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then the other one, when we talk about the Mexican drug gangs, I mentioned them earlier, they say, well, yeah, sure, you legalize marijuana, but they're not going to become Boy Scouts. They're still going to be evil, vicious criminals. Yeah, sure. Evil, vicious criminals with less budget, less money for ammo, less money for bribes, less money for corruption. Sounds like a good plan to me. And finally, a lot of people will say, and this is a quote I have at the top. This was from drug czar John Walters. He was Bush's drug czar, who said, quote, finding a first-time nonviolent offender in prison for simple marijuana possession is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you'll have a story because they just don't exist. There are actually about 40,000 people in America right now who are in prison for simple marijuana possession. And more if you start counting things they go to prison for, but they're really about marijuana. For example, if I were caught driving in one of those zero-tolerance states, I'd go to prison for a DUI, but really I'm there for the marijuana, for the metabolites in my system. So here are some of the things that happen when people get arrested for marijuana. It's not the jail time that's the worst thing. It's the arrest itself. Once you're arrested, you'll be on probation and have to submit to mandatory urinalysis. And if you fail any one of those urinalysis, you go back to prison. And the latest studies have shown that the elimination of THC from the system is not a steady linear decline. Like, you could test negative, test positive the next day, test negative, test positive the next day, even if you're not smoking, because the body eliminates THC in a very strange way. So you might end up going to jail for failing your probation, even though you stopped smoking. It happens all the time. Child custody issues. There's a woman in Canada right now who has lost the custody of her child in Oregon for the past 2 years, not because she was caught with pot, not because she was convicted of a crime, because the court said her marijuana activism makes her a bad parent. Because she's talking about it, it makes her a bad parent. Civil asset forfeiture. The government, if they convict you, if they suspect you of a drug crime, can charge your property with a crime. It's called civil asset forfeiture. And what it says, oh, look at this nice car over here. You obviously got that from selling drugs. So we're going to confiscate it. And if you can prove you didn't buy it with drug money, you can have it back. Your property is guilty until proven innocent, even if you're not convicted of a crime. You could be set free for that pound of weed in your trunk, but that car will still belong to the cops. Student loans and grants, something that should affect people in this audience. The Higher Education Act says if you're convicted of a drug offense, you are no longer eligible for federal student aid, federal student grants, federal student loans. You can lose your right to vote. This has happened, and in fact, the incarceration of African Americans for drug offenses in this country has led to more African Americans losing their right to vote now per capita than lost their right to vote during Jim Crow and the end of slavery. More disenfranchised African Americans now because of the drug war than because of Jim Crow and slavery. the right to possess firearms. You can lose your right to a gun because they say, and even if you're a medical marijuana patient, right here, Steve Sarich here in Washington, registered medical marijuana patient, but the federal application says if you're a habitual drug user, you can't have a firearm. And if you have a medical marijuana card, they assume you're a habitual user. The loss of your job. The Oregon Supreme Court just decided that having a medical marijuana card does not protect you from being fired or not being hired. Essentially, they can put up a sign that says no medical marijuana patients need apply, and you have no recourse. Eviction from your housing, especially if you're in Section 8 federal housing, any sort of federal assisted housing, you're kicked out the minute they catch you with pot. Denial of any sort of federal benefits or state benefits, unemployment, welfare, and so on. International travel restrictions, can't go to Canada, can't cross the border. And in fact, Louisiana just got a bill out of committee last week that said if you're convicted of two drug offenses, they can put the word drug offender in big orange letters on your driver's license, just like they do with sex offenders. Because, you know, people who smoke pot are just like pedophiles, right? That's what they're telling us. Drug conviction stays on your record for years. Try to get a job when you have to check that box that says, yes, I've been convicted of a drug conviction. And something that's very dear to my heart because of my engineer right over here, Ganja John, kidney failure. He's on dialysis 3 times a week. His chance of getting a kidney, if they find out he's a medical marijuana patient, he will not get that kidney. In fact, here in Washington, there was a guy named Tim Guerin who was a liver patient, a liver transplant patient, next on the list, literally had the liver in the cooler ready to transplant for this guy, found out he was a medical marijuana patient. They said, well, if you can pee clean for 6 months, we'll give you your liver. Doctors gave him 2 weeks to live. He died within a week because he was a medical marijuana patient. And the irony, of course, is his doctor recommended medical marijuana because all the other drugs they could give him for nausea and pain are hepatotoxic. They're bad for the liver. So they gave him medical marijuana, which is safe for the liver, but now he dies because he can't get a transplant. So there we go. That is the reason for legalization. From Normal, I'm Radical Russ, and we'll open up for questions if y'all have any. Thank you for coming out. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Anybody have any questions?